Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
We swear by peace and love to stand, heart to heart and hand in hand. Mark, O Spirit, and hear us now, confirming this our sacred vow. One is Christian. Christian remains are protected, and his lab has made him.
May there be peace in the south.
May there be peace in the south.
May there be peace in the west.
May there be peace in the west.
Well, some neo-pagan revelers, as National Public Radio referred to them, gathered at Stonehenge for the rising of the sun that they actually had to wait for a little bit. The clouds were out on this, the summer solstice, the longest day of the year in 2011. Many are marking this as a religious event, but is there any religious significance to, well, what amounts to the Earth's axis of rotation pointed toward the sun at its greatest angle on this day? It's really an astronomical event, although one wonders whether it has any effect. Those who buy into paganism, neo-paganism, the New Age movement would say, yes, it does. We'll find out about that here in the first half hour of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're coming to you live this Tuesday afternoon, the 21st of June, the summer solstice. It is technically, scientifically, the summer solstice. And what do Christians do with it, if not what the neo-pagans are doing with it? Richard Bonas will join us here a little bit later in this first hour. Deaconess Pam Nielsen will be our guest. We'll be journeying with Jeremiah, the Old Testament prophet, talking a lot about the exile of God's people as a punishment for their apostasy and the promise of return that came even with that judgment. In the second hour of the program, we'll talk forgiveness with Pastor Bill Swirla, being forgiven and being forgiving. You can join us for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or visit our Facebook fan page. Leave your questions or comments on forgiveness for the second hour of the program, facebook.com/issuesetc, facebook.com/issuesetc. Richard Bonas is a regular guest, nationally recognized author and journalist specializing in the areas of cults, the occult, and world religions, and he's author of numerous books, including Cults, Religious Movements, and Your Family, and Defending the Faith. Rich, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hey, Todd. How are you, buddy? Long time no talk.
I'm doing well. Is there any religious significance to this, the longest day of the year?
Well, I guess, you know, that depends on who you ask. For pagans, they would certainly say yes. And I think we have to remember that paganism itself is a very, very ancient religion that goes back to a time when nature itself was truly worshipped. They believe the gods and goddesses existed in nature. And the summer solstice basically means the sun to stand still. And religiously speaking, it was the time of year when the ancient pagans realized it was the longest day of the year, and they celebrated as a result of believing that it was a sign from the gods and goddesses of nature that all was well. And so that's sort of the religious significance of that era. And, of course, neo-pagans or the new pagans sort of celebrate that in tradition because they do still worship the great mystery, quote-unquote, that all is God and God is all, and that, you know, everything is permeating creation. So they celebrate that.
In a way, the ancient pagans can be, well, I'm not going to say excused, but their viewpoint couldn't be understood. And nowadays we live in a scientific age where we understand exactly why the sun appears to linger longer on a day like this than it does any other day of the year. We understand how the planets go around the sun and all of those kinds of things. But there are still neo-pagans who attach all that old significance to a day like this. What's going
on
there?
Absolutely. Well, absolutely. You know, they, and I think they know, unlike the original ancient pagans, the modern pagans, of course, know technically why the sun rises, how it, you know, the earth revolves around the sun and all of that. But I think what they do is they now attach more of a metaphysical idea to it, where it is sort of a symbolic representation of the great mystery of the universe, or the all-pervading source of life, the unity of all that is. And this, of course, is sort of a pantheistic view, that a monistic view that we are all one and we are all connected beneath the form that we see on the outside. So what they're sort of celebrating is that it is a sign that Mother Nature, the great mystery of all that is continuing its course of evolution and forward progress, and we are engaging as a part of that, and that is what they're sort of celebrating.
Neo-paganism, if we heard a little bit of their chants, their sacred oaths, as they call them, that were made at Stonehenge on the 21st of June there in Great Britain, all about peace and love and universal understanding and all of those things. Those, I take it, are distinctly neo-pagan ideas. Did the ancient pagans, were they all about peace and love?
Well, you know, it depended on, again, which ancient pagan group you would go to. You might find, and this is the same way it is today, there's great diversity among neo-pagans as there was among ancient pagans. Ancient pagans, you might find some who were very much into the peace and harmony and oneness with nature. And yet you will find other pagans who were fairly violent in human sacrifice and ripping hearts out, and so, and then everything in between. So it was quite a gamut of beliefs, and you'll find that today. I mean, you'll find neo-pagans that are involved in shamanism on one end of the spectrum, to Odinism, which exalts the Norse and Anglo-Saxon mythologies, you know, the Vikings and all that. And then you'll find Dianic worship, the goddess Diana, and that is more of a sort of a super feministic type leaning toward neo-paganism. It's a very diverse field of religion. It's very interesting.
The ancient pagans may have, well, worshipped the sun, believing it to be a deity of some kind. The neo-pagans, I think they're more likely to worship the earth, aren't they, Rich?
Yeah. Neo-pagans, they look at everything as part of one great mystery, and or this one interconnectedness of all that is the source of everything. And that, I think, they sort of consider God. But over this, you will see them worshiping all kinds of gods and goddesses: Isis, Diana, Odin, Pan, Artemis, Hecate, Kali. And what these are sort of personalized masks, if you will, that go over the great all, the great source of all that is. And so you'll find a lot of individualism within the neo-pagan movement, where they find a god or a goddess that they like, basically, and that they can sort of connect to, and that is sort of the polytheistic face they put over their monotheistic view of all that is.
But I would, with the few minutes before we take our first break here, Rich, we're tempted to make light of this, but most neo-pagans are pretty serious in these beliefs, even if they don't believe there is a literal god or goddess or gods or goddesses. They're pretty serious about it, aren't they?
Oh, very, very serious. I mean, you know, people who are involved in other religious belief systems that don't happen to be Christian doesn't make them any less sincere. So you'll definitely find, you know, these neo-pagans are very serious in their worship of the various gods and goddesses. This is very serious business to them. Sure, I mean, that's why they make the trek all the way out, you know, as far away as from America to Stonehenge to celebrate the summer solstice. It's serious.
What is the neo-pagan view of, you've talked a lot about kind of the monism, that everything is one, everything is united. What is their view of man in that universe, according to neo-paganism?
Well, that we are, you know, we are underneath our external form, where we appear to be individuals, we appear to be separate identities. In reality, beneath the surface, the true essence of who and what we are, indeed the true essence of what everything is all the same. Therefore, we are actually part of this great oneness, this great mystery that is all. And so we are, in a sense, divine. It's very, very akin to the New Age movement that feels the same way, to Hinduism that teaches the same thing. But neo-paganism puts more of this paganistic veneer over it, and their outward expression of how they believe that is what's different.
What are the symbols of light and darkness to neo-pagans?
Well, you know, light, again, if you go back to, if you want to understand paganism, even neo-paganism, all you really need to do is go back into history, into time, and look at some of these things that are symbolic. Light, of course, represented warmth, life itself, provision, food, the summer, crops, everything that's good. Darkness was cold, winter, night, a time when there was danger around. So we see evil associated with that. So light and dark are very important to neo-pagans, and you'll see this a lot in their writings and even in their symbolism that they use. In neo-pagan art, for example, you'll see a lot of sun's rays and light emanating out of darkness. Very symbolic. It's a very symbolic religion, neo-paganism. And that's part of the draw, by the way. People love symbols. And it's kind of, you know, exciting. It's almost like immersing yourself in Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings, you know.
Let's take a break when we come back. 10 more minutes with Rich Abanis. He's a nationally recognized author and journalist specializing in the areas of cults, the occult, and world religions. Author of numerous books, including Cults, Religious Movements in Your Family, and Defending the Faith. We're talking about neo-paganism and the celebration of the summer solstice on this Tuesday, June the 21st. We're coming to you live. 1-877-623-MY-IE. Any question or comment you might have about the summer solstice? 1-877-623-6943.
Wouldn't it be great if more of your fellow parishioners listened to Issues Etc.? Well, here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. The bulletin blurb is updated weekly, issuesetc.org. Stay connected, issuesetc.org.
Hi, this is Kate in Japan, and I'm commenting on the program you had about the Unification Church.
Thanks to God's gift of the Internet, people are listening to Issues Etc. around the world.
The most important point is to say I love your show and thank you for doing what you do. Bye from Japan.
Old theology, new technology, Issues Etc. worldwide. Listen to what you want, when you want, wherever you are. Issues Etc. issuesetc.org.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7, 618-223-8384.
We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology. And we'd like to send you an Issues Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk about the summer solstice and neo-paganism. Rich Abanis is our guest. Rich, before the break, you were telling us about man's place in paganism. One of the draws of this is how symbolic neo-paganism is. So a day like this obviously is going to have some symbolic significance. Why do they celebrate it nowadays? Why are the neo-pagans, what exactly are they celebrating from their perspective on the summer solstice?
Well, I think from their perspective, that they're looking at the summer solstice very much like the ancients did, where it's sort of a symbolic representation of the ongoing life force, energy, strength, vitality of Mother Nature itself, that which we are all connected to. It's very exciting for them to be a part of a day when we see sort of the height of nature's glorious quality and as the longest day of the year. And this, in fact, is supposed to be sort of, has been termed the wedding of heaven and earth together, when you have sort of all the aspects of Mother Nature coming together as one, and it's the longest day of the year. In fact, it's supposed to be a very lucky day, a very lucky month, in fact, and that's where the whole sort of superstition around having a June wedding is supposed to be lucky. That actually comes from paganism and the wedding or the merging of heaven and earth together on this day.
According to neo-paganism, what is man's problem, if he has one?
Well, man's problem is first of all, an inability to simply understand his place, his nature in the cosmos. This is why even in the New Age movement, you will find enlightenment or salvation, we as Christians might sort of compare it to, is being an understanding of who and what we are, and that is basically God, one with nature all around us. And if we can come to a place where we truly believe that, we truly embrace that and make that a part of ourselves, that will bring about a more complete understanding of who we are, will help us live our lives, it will help us roll with the troubles that we may face in life. It will help us supposedly get along with others better, because if we view others as being equal and completely the same as us, then we will want to treat them as we would want to be treated. Sort of a pagan twist on the scripture about treating others as you would have them treat you. What's interesting, though, is that within neo-paganism, unlike in Christianity, truth itself, or what we determine as right and wrong, good and bad, is very subjective. So for the pagan, what feels right to them will be right. And that, of course, can cause all kinds of problems, as you know.
So is it a convenient convergence between neo-paganism and its subjectivity and our postmodern way of thinking, where, again, everything, including truth itself, is declared to be subjective?
Oh, absolutely, Todd. You said it very, very well. I think in our postmodern society, as you well know, there is this push toward a very me-centered, me-oriented, subjective, what I believe is true, what I want is what I should have, and that fits along very, very well with neo-paganism, with Wicca, which is the formalized form of witchcraft, with the New Age movement, with the occult. This whole thrust in our society now with all of these movements does boil down to a case of either, you know, you being God in some way, shape, or form, and you deciding what is right and wrong based upon your own intuition or your own feelings. It does go along very well with that.
How is this neo-pagan enlightenment achieved? I imagine there are a variety of answers, but if you could kind of broad brush an answer for us, how would a neo-pagan achieve oneness or unity with nature?
Well, basically, it would involve, in its most simplest form, going within oneself and connecting with one's own source or one's own self, higher self, however you might want to call that. And the way that's done is through various rites and rituals, lighting candles, burning incense, meditating on a certain either passage of the Bible or the Bhagavad Gita or some other sort of holy writing, writing up your own chants would be helpful to them, and that they would chant this, perhaps put themselves in a place of an altered state of consciousness. Sometimes it would be very Zen-like, where a neo-pagan will go out to a meadow and simply stare at a flower for a long time until they sort of become one with that flower. So there's a variety of tactics and techniques that can be used to achieve this inner enlightenment.
Kathy is listening in St. Charles, Missouri. Kathy, thanks for waiting on the line.
Yeah, I have two thoughts. One, when these neo-pagans come from Christianity, if they are so interested in symbolism, why do they leave a traditional church, not all churches, but some churches, the Catholic Church, of course, and others similar, you know, have a great deal of symbolism within the church that's much richer than the pagan symbolism. The other thing is, too, when I hear you talking in broad terms about neo-paganism, I think of the radical environmentalists, and could you draw some connections there, or are there any?
Kathy, thank you very much. Let's deal with our second question first here, Rich, and that is the connections between some of the environmental movement and neo-pagan ideas.
Yeah, I think there's certainly in some segments of the radical environmentalists, they would fall into this realm of neo-pagans. There would be some neo-pagans involved with that. I wouldn't want to say that, you know, all neo-pagans are in that way, because radical environmentalism does at sometimes dip into violence and things of that would be termed negative or negativity by most neo-pagans, who truly like to just sort of be off by themselves and do their own things and sort of live and let live. And so you might find the more extremists, for example, even in Christianity, you'll find extremists. I think that same thing can be said for other religious belief systems, including neo-pagans. So, but that you shouldn't think that's all neo-pagans.
How do neo-pagans generally view Christianity, Orthodox Christianity?
Well, that, unfortunately, they view Christianity quite negatively, and I think it's safe to say that most neo-pagans would do that. They see Christianity in many ways as a source of a lot of anguish and pain and anxiety that's been brought into the world. And habitually, they will point to, you know, the Crusades, the witch hunts, just everything negative that's ever been associated with Christianity. They will also point to the sort of patriarchal coloring of Christianity and say it's against women and all this. And of course, it's a very one-sided view of Christianity. It's you can take anything, any subject, any group, and pick out the worst of the worst and make it seem bad. But they do view Christianity in that way, and I think that's one of the ways we as Christians can minister to neo-pagans, is to show them a face of Christianity that, to be honest, perhaps they've never seen, a side that's thoughtful, rational, loving, kind, gentle, basically being the real Jesus to them. And that is sort of one reason why I think many neo-pagans who have converted from Christianity to neo-paganism, that may actually be one reason why they left, because they perhaps had bad church experiences, they've gotten involved with bad groups and bad teaching, and that's why we, as believers who are doctrinally sound, can make a difference in their life, and that's our responsibility.
I guess we should say, although it's 6 months away, at the other end of this celebration, the summer solstice is the winter solstice. That would be the shortest amount of daylight at any given point on the planet per year. And how would the neo-pagans understand that?
Well, I think that would take them into a time of deep meditation and thoughtfulness and reflection, understanding that they're going into a sleep mode, the darker side of Mother Nature. And I think that is a perfect time as we celebrate the birth of Christ and the light that has come into the world. That is a perfect time to be able to go to neo-pagan and say, rejoice, you know, the light has come into the world, even though outwardly it seems there's darkness. I think that's a perfect witnessing opportunity.
Finally then, Rich, those who would say we can kind of find a halfway house between neo-paganism and Christianity, why can't we mix the two and their ideas about man, about God, about nature together? With 30 seconds, what's your response?
Just very quickly, it's impossible, can't be done. They deny a personal God, which is the kind of God we worship, and they also deny the need for a Savior and Redeemer from our sins. And thirdly, they are very much heavily involved in occultic means, usually through divination or even communication with the dead. And that, of course, is something that Scripture completely condemns that we can't have a part of. So the best way to reach out to neo-pagans is to truly be doctrinally sound, on fire for the Lord, loving Christians who represent Jesus Christ.
Rich Abanis is a nationally recognized author and journalist specializing in the areas of cults and the occult and world religions. He's author of numerous books, including Cults, Religious Movements, and Your Family, and Defending the Faith. Rich, thank you very much for being our guest.
Always a pleasure, Todd. Take care.
When we come back, Pam Nielsen will be with us. The Good Deaconess will lead us through some passages pertaining to the prophet Jeremiah, God's people in the Old Testament, being threatened with and finally being sent into exile because of their apostasy, yet with a promise of their return and of a greater restoration than any of them would live to see in Jesus Christ. Well, he says, I am the light of the world, so the sun can rise and set and stay in the sky as long as it wants. The real light of the world is none other than Jesus himself. We'll be right back. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
It's not about you. It's about Jesus for you. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Imagine you're debating a university professor on campus. Not only does he say unborn babies aren't human, he suggests a baby isn't a person until about 18 months of age. This is what happened to Stephanie Gray. But the poor guy didn't know who he was up against. Stephanie made mincemeat out of him. She said, human is an objective term we can determine scientifically. And the scientific community is unanimous. Life begins at fertilization. Those who refuse to acknowledge the humanity of the unborn child are living in the dark ages. Modern medical science has proven beyond a shadow of a doubt it's clearly a baby. Ultrasound has been one of our most effective tools. So don't be afraid to stand up for unborn babies. Science is on your side.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.